Well, over the course of this Lenten season, we've been talking about salvation in the storm. And tonight, everybody at the table with Jesus is about to get their feet wet. And to a man, they have cold feet about the entire situation. They have cold feet because Jesus takes on the form of a servant before them. And we can assume that their feet had already been cleaned by the actual servants, because this happened not before the meal, but during it. During the supper, Jesus took off his robe and knelt before Peter and then the rest. Jesus was making a special statement in the middle of the meal. But the disciples have cold feet. Peter insists, "You will not touch my feet, Lord. Not you. Not at all." Peter's got cold feet. Peter, and perhaps he's not the only one, doesn't want to be in anybody's debt. He doesn't want Jesus to see far more than the lint between his toes or the dust from the road. Peter doesn't want Jesus to see just how vulnerable human touch can make him. Doesn't want to see that when this man is washing my feet, I can't hide anything from him. And if he, my Lord, who's been sharing, proclaiming the kingdom and doing signs and wonders to the crowds, if he should wash my feet, how could I place myself in his debt? What could I possibly do with this? No, Lord. And Peter, not for the first, not for the last time, puts his foot in his mouth and tries to do Jesus the honor of saving him from shame. That Jesus sometimes gets himself in further than Peter thinks he intended. And Peter would help him out, like he did on the mountaintop when Jesus says, "We're going to Jerusalem now, and I must be handed over to be crucified." And Peter says, "By no means. We're going with you, and we're going to prevent that from happening." And Jesus tells him, "Get behind me with that kind of talk. That's the devil's talk. That's not what I must do." Peter has cold feet. He doesn't want to be in anybody's debt. And in his story, I think we can learn that we need also to resist the instinct of our proud humility. And our upright conscience. I feel pretty good, Jesus. My feet are pretty good. They already got washed once tonight. I'm going to just do the humble thing, Jesus. You don't have to wash my feet. Peter, full of his proud humility. We do this in other ways. Oh, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. It's Jesus is the only one who doesn't have cold feet. And that's not because their feet are wet and his are not. Jesus doesn't have cold feet because he has already, in the previous chapter, been troubled in spirit and said, "Father, what should I say? Save me from this hour?" No, it's for this hour that I've come. The hour has come. And at the outset now, as this great cosmic gospel of John zooms in to now a quiet room just before night, and it says that Jesus loved his own while he was in the world, and he loved him to the end. Jesus didn't get cold feet. Not because his soul was not troubled. It becomes troubled again later in our gospel. And not because he's not going to depart and go into a garden and pray in agony that the Father would remove this cup of suffering from him. Even so, Jesus would do the Father's will and his own will that he came to carry out. No, it's not because Jesus was untroubled in his soul that he didn't get cold feet. It's because he loved us to the end. He didn't flag or fail or falter in the race marked out for him. So when Peter gets cold feet, Jesus brings some hot water. He says, "Unless I wash you, you have nothing to share with me." And then Peter overcorrects and says, "Oh, just wash away. Let's do everything. Wash everything." Jesus says, "I'm not talking about making your whole body clean right now. I'm talking about something deeper, Peter. I'm talking about how you are clean. You are clean. Yeah, your feet are cold now and they're wet, but you are clean. Not because I've served you in this way. You are clean, as he will go on to say in the next few chapters as he has an extended farewell sermon of and encouragement to them. He'll go on to say, you are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. You are already clean. Not because you washed your feet before coming to the Last Supper, not because you got your life in order before coming to church. No, you're clean because Jesus is talking to you. And he can't talk to sinners without making them clean. And the first thing he does to make a sinner clean is he puts them in hot water. And he says, you are not clean. If you want to share with me, having a share with me does not mean me patting you on the head for being my lead disciple, Peter. Having a share of me means I'm going to stoop lower than you were ever willing to go. And you're going to be so far in my debt over the course of these next hours and days that you will no longer be able to see yourself, Peter, without seeing my life in you and your life in me. But Jesus throws these hot water words on Peter, and then the rest of the disciples, they don't seem to protest. And Jesus goes on to wash their feet. And Judas is still there. And Judas gets his feet wet. And Judas is going to receive a piece of bread. He's there at the Lord's table to receive this Passover meal that Jesus fills with the meaning of a Messiah can't come near. You are clean, but not all of you, because one of you has lifted his heel against me. All the way back in the garden, that serpent was told by the Father, you're going to keep nipping at the heel of this woman's descendants, but she has an offspring coming who will crush your head. So in the meantime, crawl on the ground and eat dust for the days of your life, because the day is coming now where Satan for the last time strikes the heel of Jesus, this time through the agency of Judas. But before long, and tomorrow evening we will hear, it is finished. It is finished. He loved you, his own, to the end, to the finish. So with hot water, he washes his disciples with his word. We've been talking about salvation in the storm, and a lot of that metaphor has involved avoiding the storm or getting through the storm in one piece. But beginning tonight and over the course of these next 3 days, we see, in fact, that this storm collapses around all of us, that Jesus draws us to himself, he as the eye of the storm, starts bringing everything around his cross, our sin, Satan and his heel-biting ways, the power of the world expressed in Roman power, the wisdom of the Greeks expressed in those who consider Jesus foolish, the height of human religion as the Jews conspire together to save the people from their very God. And this is how Jesus washes us by the water. He comes as a refining fire. He comes as fuller's soap. He washes us by the water. He washes us by his word that makes us clean. You are my baptized child. With you I am well pleased. Do thee, Lord, the honor of believing his promise rather than your conscience. Do the Lord the honor of believing his promise rather than your conscience, rather than your merit or your deserving. Jesus has overcome their cold feet with that hot water, and then he provides Judas with a cover story to leave into the cold night. Having received the piece of bread, Judas immediately went out, and it was night. And Peter, I told you it was not for the last time, now begins to share hot air. Lord, Why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. And Jesus says, will you lay down your life for me? Truly, I tell you, before the cock crows, you will have denied me three times. And in the midst of our cold feet and hot air of words and promises, and on a cold night gathering in, and the hot water of Jesus' words that make us clean, Jesus serves a warm meal. Warm bread and Passover wine that warms the heart and the soul. He begins to put his promises into this meal. A tradition that these disciples had practiced since they were little boys. Since it was their turn as the youngest child of their families growing up to ask questions like, why is this night unlike any other night? And now Jesus warms this meal with his very presence. This bread is my body. This cup, this wine, is my blood. What brought your ancestors out of Egypt, I will now bring you out of slavery to sin, death, and the devil. And where I'm going to accomplish this, you can't follow. But in verse 36, he says, you will follow me afterward. Afterward. There's nothing Peter can do before Easter. There's nothing any of these disciples can do except strike at the heel of Jesus, or deny knowing him to save their own skins, or desert him when the arrest comes, or fall asleep when Jesus asks them to pray and hold vigil with him in the garden. There's nothing much else that the disciples can do on that side of the resurrection. But Jesus always keeps a promise. He says, you can't follow me just now, but you will follow me afterward. Because afterward, Peter and Mary Magdalene, and the beloved disciple, and the 11 disciples outside of Judas, and hundreds of witnesses over the course of 40 days would see Jesus. And in seeing Jesus, they would receive the one who sent him, God the Father. Just like Jesus disrobed and knelt at the disciples' feet, he is acting out again what he is doing and disrobing himself of all the grandeur and privilege of divinity, making himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being found in human likeness and becoming obedient to death on a cross. Jesus removes his protections to put himself into our hands. Worship goes first downward. God comes down in Jesus. Jesus kneels at our feet. From God to us, God serves, and then we respond in thanksgiving and praise. And then our worship goes outward. We follow Jesus afterward, but we don't follow him in order to save ourselves. We follow him to say, people, nations, tribes, family, friends, beloved, you are clean. Jesus has made everything complete. Jesus turns us around from our hot air, promising we'll never leave or forsake Jesus. We'll lay our life down from him. Jesus says, you can give your life to me if that helps you feel good from time to time. But I have given my life for you, and I will not take that back. You belong to me now, says Jesus. Where I am, you may also be. And right after this scene is when he says those beautiful words that we've heard in this place at many a memorial service. Let not your hearts be troubled. Trust God. Trust me. My Father's house has many rooms, and I'm going to prepare a place for you. And I'm coming back to take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. So I invite you, my beloved Bethesda family and friends, to follow Jesus now afterwards, to follow Jesus not to his cross, but to kneel at the altar in full confession that, Lord, I didn't follow you to that cross. I wouldn't have, or I wouldn't have stayed when the air got hot or the water got hot. And hear the words expressed on my lips and Deanna's lips, this is for you. This body, this blood is for you. Because here's the promise. Jesus said it here in the gospel. Anyone who receives one that I've sent receives me. And who receives me receives the one who sent me. That's the simple invitation tonight. Come to the altar. Jesus is for you. Receiving the meal that you receive from a brother and a sister in Christ, you are receiving Jesus. And in receiving Jesus, you are receiving the Father. And there is nothing left to finish. You have already been made clean by the word, Jesus Christ. Come down, disrobed unto death, and raised to life eternal. Amen.